Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. One of our most popular guests over the years has been Kenneth Lett, no doubt in part because of his ability to recall in his later life the future events he had observed during his NDE, which was brought on by an operation at age 8.
To prepare him for an operation on his burst appendix, a nurse strapped 8-year-old Kenneth Lett to an operating table where he was sedated with ether. About the operation, Ken has written, I suddenly became aware of the root of my existence. It was like I said to myself, I think, therefore I am, and now I must go on. Somehow I knew that I was still alive, but I was in a very dark place. All of the events that put me in this very quiet place no longer mattered. I couldn't feel my body because I was separated from it. Eventually, I became curious about my surroundings, and slowly my vision returned. I discovered a long thread hanging down from my whitish, wispy existence. It led down to my body on the operating table. I couldn't move up or down because of it, and then I spied other wispy people. Well, here to tell you himself what he saw next is today's guest, Kenneth Leth. Ken, welcome to NDE Radio. And Ken, please pick up your story from where I left off.
Oh, okay. Well, hi, Lee, and good morning, everyone. And goodness, that's a great introduction. So I'm aware of my existence, aware of the thread that keeps me from moving around. I felt kind of trapped, but I wasn't frightened. I was just wondering, you know, what is this and what's going on here? And then I did start seeing other wispy-like people, and they did resemble people, persons. Most of them were older, and they seemed to be very happy to be moving up, and I noticed a lot of them seemed to be older. And there was an older fellow that stopped and asked me why I was still there, that why I he was concerned that I wasn't moving up, and I showed him that I couldn't, and he tried to help me, but he just didn't feel good. So I understand now that moving up is to head up toward the light, toward the existence of God, toward heaven. And it seems like we're pre-programmed to look for that. And the moving up is something that we're supposed to do. We just somehow know that we have to do it.
Yes.
During that time, I also witnessed something that I knew was on Earth, and it was a car accident, and it was very severe. And I heard a woman screaming, and I remember wishing that I wished that somebody would help her because she's screaming and she's so distraught. And she was screaming because she discovered members of her family in a vehicle that had apparently died. But I didn't feel the disruption of that like you would here on Earth. As an 8-year-old child on Earth, I would have been mortified to see that. But in that spiritual existence, it was just something. It was something I saw, but I still felt no fear. But fear did come to me because as I realized I could not move any further, I started to look around my surroundings, and I noticed that others were there that had noticed me, and they were hiding in the shadows. And it was very clear to me that they could understand thoughts. And so when I started having thoughts of uncertainty, or I didn't know where I was, or confusion, these other entities looked at it like it was a weakness, and they drew closer. And they were evil. They had a mind to do, you know, terrible things to me if they could, to torment, and they did. And so they what I remember distinctly was they could fly where I could not, and they would swoop down toward me like an attack, and then hit me and then spin me around in circles, and the spinning made my confusion even more more so. And it wasn't fun. And at one point I remember calling out that I wish it would stop, and I believe the way I said it was, please, God, make them stop. And I remember crying and saying that somehow I was speaking words, but yet I was a spirit. And immediately they stopped. And there was silence and there was peace. And
Ken, do you suppose those were deceased humans, like confused ghosts, or were they more fallen angels or demonic types?
I believe they were people. They resembled kids.
Kids? Wow.
Yeah, children, bad kids. but they were kids that perhaps had lived without any knowledge of God, or had not been given any instruction. They had, the best way I can describe them perhaps is they existed in the absence of light. So it's possible that, they were demonic and, or demonic, I should say. But, there was no talking. There was just laughter on their part. They were delighted that I was afraid. They thrived on it.
They were having fun with you.
Yeah, they were having fun with me. And they could not exist in God's light. And I was in a very dark place where there was very little light. It was darker than dark. So they had full reign. It was their place. And I was stuck there. But until I said, please, God, make them stop, they had the upper hand. And then suddenly I heard a voice from the distance calling out, like, hey there, I heard you. Where are you? You know, show me where you are. And I would, you know, acknowledge, and I'm down here. And then all of a sudden I saw this like entity, and there was like a white light that just started to grow stronger and stronger. And those things that were spinning me around and chuckling and laughing and having such delight, they disappeared immediately. They could not stay there. They could not exist in this light. And I believe what came to me was an angel. And so there was discussion over, did you call out for God? And I said, yes. And I think the question was, do you know who God is? And I started explaining that as a child, we had gone to church. I had experienced that. And that we had gone to church quite often on Sundays, those kinds of things. It was my childlike understanding of God, and so I talked about the church a little bit. And then I noticed as I spoke longer and as the meeting took place and was going on longer, then this angel began to glow better and better so that I could see its form. And it was a man, a very pleasant man. And he had a very pleasant voice. He wouldn't take any compliments, and he was there to protect me. And I knew that as long as he was there, I was safe. So he understood that I was stuck on a thread to my body, and he saw that. He even looked down into the operating room. He understood the situation completely. And so he made the decision that you need to keep moving up like the others. Somehow that was discussed. And he cut the string that tied me, and he put me into a bubble. He said, now you be safe. And then he got called someplace else. It was like he was in communication with a higher level of heaven. It was like when he was being spoken to from up above, I distinctly remember a yellowish, glowing, warm light. And then he would talk, he would look upward and talk, and then there would be communication between them. And he was evidently told that he was expected to go to another place where he was needed, and that I should just be sent on up. And so he did. It was discussed what to do with me. It was baffling. So I can continue if you wish.
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm in this bubble, and I'm floating up, and I'm looking up above the Earth now, and I'm way up high, up into the stars, and I recognize that I'm in the universe, and there's stars everywhere. Then I realized after a while, though, that the stars were moving, and they're moving along with me, and we were all moving up toward a huge tunnel that was circular, and it was like a whirlpool, and we were at the big open end of it, and we were being sucked into it, and then we were getting pulled into the tunnel as it got more narrow. And so all of the stars were actually spirits like myself, and we were being pulled up into this tunnel, and I could hear voices of delight and surprise when they got into the tunnel. It was like it was an enjoyable experience. So I was happy to be there too. I was comfortable. And once I got to the end of the tunnel, then I floated free for a very short amount of time, and I came to what is very much like a cloud barrier, much like heaven is described, you know, the clouds of heaven. Mm. And my bubble bounced off these clouds and would not go any further. And I sat there a very brief time, and then something reached down through the cloud and grabbed me by the shoulders and pulled me up. And I was suddenly standing in front of a man I didn't recognize. And he looked to be like, I don't know, in his mid-20s, maybe early 30s. He had modern-day looking pants. I mean, pants like I'd seen my father wear. And I distinctly remember a leather jacket. I found out later that we're pretty certain that he was my father's cousin who was killed in the Korean War. And he would have been about 25. And he died before I was born. I was born in 1955. So this was 1963. So he'd been dead probably close to 10 years at least. So anyway, I didn't know him, but he was a very friendly guy and happy-go-lucky and glad to have you here. And, well, we got some people we need to meet. Let's go on up over here. And he just kind of led me along and made sure I was okay. And then I came up to all these people that I didn't know, and they didn't know me either. And they were asking back and forth, well, who is this? Who are you? And lots of chatter. And somehow I mustered the strength to communicate, and I said, my name is Kenneth. I'm Kenneth Lett. And they didn't seem to know me. So these older women were saying, well, who's your father? I said, my father's name is Lyle. And then it was like, oh, we know him. Hmm. And then it was explained to me that he was their grandchild. Lyle was their grandchild. And that, so, yeah, they knew my dad. And then it was like a big celebration. So,
At this time, you were still in the form of an eight-year-old, weren't you?
Yeah, you know, when I tell my story to a younger audience, there's been some kids in my family, for example, they're still in grade school that their parents have allowed them to read my story and to listen to me talk about it a little bit. And that's the one question the kids always seem to come up with is, what did you look like? Were you a ghost, or were you in human form, or what were you? All I can say is I was wispy like smoke, kind of whitish, yet I had human form. It was almost like a photograph that you can see through, almost an X-ray, kind of like that, only I had human form. I don't remember wearing clothes, but I'm almost certain I did, some form of clothing.
Now, something else along that line, to jump back a minute, you said when you saw all those millions of stars and got closer to them, that it turned out they were actually spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were spirits like myself.
So when we look at the stars in the sky, we think of, you know, inert matter or, you know, something like our sun without a soul to it. Are you see, what's the relationship there? Did you just mistake them for stars, or were they really stars that are spirits?
Well, that's hard to say. I think I actually did see the galaxy because I recognized that I was above the Earth and going up.
Okay.
And I full well expected to see stars once I got up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd learned about them in school, so maybe it would be better for me to say, or more clear for me to say, that as I got closer to the tunnel and I was drawn into it, I realized that there were other entities like myself headed in that direction, but they resembled a bright star.
I gotcha.
Each one of us sort of glowed.
Wow. So there you are now with your family, getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And what happened then?
Well, I got introduced to a lot of people that had known my father, and there were a lot of them that were very eager to meet me. It's very friendly, very loving, an absolutely fabulous situation to be in. And there's no room for shyness, and there's no place to really wonder about what you're going to say, because it's all spoken from the heart and what you're feeling, and they know it. You don't necessarily have to speak what you're thinking and feeling. They sense it. And so I got a good grasp or a good sense of the generation that my great-grandmothers, both of them on my father's side, I got a good sense of what their lives were like. And so I can almost feel the plaster walls, the wood-burning stoves, the stovepipes, the chickens in the yard, you know, that kind of life, the heavy clothing. It all just sort of came to me. I understood it. And as a matter of fact, I live in an older house now, and it just feels right. But they eventually told me that somebody was coming to talk to me, and somebody very special, and that I shouldn't be afraid. And there's a lot of female influence in my story. So an entity or a woman came to me, and she exuded even more love than my great-grandmother's. And it was so strong that it came to the point where I just recognized her as a mother, but a very powerful mother. But she wasn't introduced as a family member. And she came from a generation that was way, 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 way back in history. In fact, her clothing looked like a potato sack, a very loose weave type of clothing, very coarse, like the kind of stuff you'd expect people to wear in ancient times. And I remember pointing out her haircut and how it was a little bit rough, where all the women that I've been standing with, you know, they all had their hair up on those old-fashioned buns or whatnot, but this woman had her hair roughly cut, and it was explained to me that she cut it with a knife. I do remember that, which is odd. She took me and said, I have something to show you. And so I went with her, and I was glad to be with her. And it's like as we got closer, her love got better and warmer and more powerful. And there were points when I was transforming into like a baby, and she was holding me in her arms and cuddling me. And then there were times when I was just a little boy, and she led me by the hand. And she explained to me that my family goes very, very far back in history, that we have many, many generations of my family are already up there with me. And she explained that she's going to show them to me. And she sort of waved her arm, and another type of tunnel or a cave opened up. And then I could see layers or levels going back in the tunnel, way back, multiple generations. And at each level, there was some sort of wispy entity as myself, and it was explained that they were members of my family. And I saw couples, you know, like older couples rocking in rocking chairs and waving hello. I saw a woman, a single woman, that was sweeping her back doorstep, and it was explained to me that she never married. I'm not real sure who she was, but family members going way, way, way back, and some of them waved, and they knew who I was, and they're happy to see me. It's like I got the impression as we give birth to more generations, our families that we're connected to up there move back closer toward the light of God. It's kind of like a ladder. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but because at the end of the tunnel, I saw a very bright light at the very, very far end, an extremely bright light. And then this woman that I called Mother, she told me that, and she said, look here, it's coming here to greet you. And, you know, this part is really vague. I don't know if she actually introduced to me what this light was. Part of me says that I was told that you might know him as my son, this is Jesus. But what I saw was just a bright light. And I can't be positive, and I can't absolutely say that I was introduced to Jesus. It just, I'm sorry, the memory just isn't that solid. But what I do know is that that bright light came to me, that ball of energy, and it was very pure, very powerful, and it took me up into it. And I was completely torn apart down to the molecule and put back together is the only way I can describe it. I was complete, yet I was completely taken apart at the same time. The love was that powerful.
You lost the integrity of yourself in the light. In other words, did you merge with the light, would you say?
Yeah. Yet I was separate. It was in control, but it did that, I guess, to know every part of me. There was nothing to hide. It knew everything.
Wow.
It was just all there on display. And so then I got to see visions of what my life had been up until that point. And I saw my own birth. There was a problem with my birth, and information on that came out there. That might be for another story or another session. But I saw my own birth, and there was problems with it. Oh, help me, Lee. I'm kind of having a brain stutter. Where would you like me to go from here?
Well, you got this history of your family, and let's see, and then you encountered the light, and then like a life review, what many people who've had NDEs describe. Of course, there's not a whole lot to go over when you're that young, but you had an incident where you felt guilty, I think, about hitting your brother.
Oh yeah, that. Well, this is, you know, the thing I'd like to point out is it really bothers me back here on earth when I hear religious leaders start talking about guilt and shame and all these things, and we should be pleading for mercy from God and all that. Boy, does that get old. Because I didn't get it like that when I was up there. It was pointed out that I definitely done something wrong. And that was one time I was playing with my brother. And my brother and I never did really get along. We're like the sun and the moon. Our personalities are so different. But I got angry with him to the point that I took a toy baseball bat and I whapped him over the head. And he cried. And it was there. And it was shown. And Mother pointed out to me that you do not do that to your fellow human beings. You do not do that to your brothers and sisters. You do not do that to anyone ever. You do not hurt people. That is the way. And I felt very chastised. I was like, oh, yes, Mother, I totally understand. It will never happen again. And it hasn't. If I've hurt somebody throughout my life, it's been completely by accident. From that point forward, I'm really slow to anger, and I do not communicate with my fist. Never. So.
And then I think you also mentioned playing with your grandfather. Grandpa Steve.
One of my visions. Yeah, my family had this thing of getting together all the time, and it'd be like coffee or whatever, just to visit and chat. They just loved to do that, and there were a lot of people in my family. So, and this would be my mother's side, but I saw a vision. I was a toddler, and Mom was holding me in her arms. And we were at the kitchen table, and it was surrounded by family members, my mother's parents. And then they had, I have an aunt that's only a couple of years older than me, so they had kids still. They were there too. And so, I don't know, I started playing a game with my grandfather. He loved to play with kids. So I stuck my hand out. Mom held me in safety, but I stuck my arm out, my hand, and got it close to my Grandpa Steve. And then he started animating and acting like he was going to swallow my fingers. He was going to bite them off. And he made a funny munching sound and squealed with delight. And then I turned away to the safety of my mother. And then sure enough, I turned my hand out again, and I tried to sneak up to Grandpa Steve, and he acted like he wasn't looking. And then pretty soon he snarled and turned, and my fingers were on his lips, and he was acting like he's munching, and I was laughing, and everyone was laughing. And we relived that moment. And those are the kind of things that I believe are really important up in heaven. Those are the kinds of things that were really acknowledged as good things in my life. I do remember that.
That the communication between friends and family members that are bringing you really close together.
Fun, delight, you know, and the simple things in life. Yeah, those mean the most.
You had a vision of the Bible, I think was the next thing that you had written about.
I did. I had a vision of the Bible. I don't recall what part of the near-death took place, because I know there were times when I was shown things, like an incredible amount of information was coming my way, and it was really difficult to decipher which was more important. But I do remember one specific time where I was shown the Bible, and I believe it was because I had talked about being involved in Christianity. I was told that the Bible has been misinterpreted and misunderstood, abused, and is actually the cause of a lot of anger and strife on earth. And a lot of it has to do for interpretations that we take for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We all, as humanity, we just need to kind of sit back and just ask ourselves, are all these rituals and all these things that we've developed over thousands of years based on this old Bible, does all this that we're doing really please God? Does God really want us to do all these things? Because we really do surround ourselves with a lot of complicated rituals and beliefs and interpretations. It really bothers me when there's people, again, I don't have a lot of respect for religious leaders who are outspoken and seem to be trying to punish or direct punishment towards humanity all the time, trying to direct how we think, how we live, and what God wants. And they're so far away from it all. The message that they're giving is based more on fear and restriction and guilt. There's none of that in heaven. And I really wish that people down here on earth would just knock it off. It doesn't do us any good.
No, and, you're absolutely right.
After I had been shown my various levels or generations of family back in that tunnel, and by the entity that I refer to as Mother, Mother took me to other places. She didn't take me directly back to my family. She took me other places and showed me other things. And so one of the places that she took me was to a place where it appeared to be a model of the earth, and it was up on a pedestal. It was very intricate. Seems to me there were like lights and things coming off of the surface. Perhaps I saw some circular streaks of light going around it, circulating it. And I know that when I got closer to it, I was extremely interested in it, because I've always been the type of kid that machinery is something that I've always really enjoyed. I seem to have a knack with machinery. So I was very interested in it. So Mother took me there, but there was another entity taking care of this globe. And this other entity was more like a teacher. And she was a little more, she wasn't so much loving. She was just full of information. And I believe this other entity was female as well. And I think I remember Mother walking away for a moment, or just standing back and letting me talk and and communicate with this other entity. So this other person that was maintaining this earth was explaining to me that all things on earth can be observed on this model. And I was looking at it closely, and I asked, well, where am I at? Where do I fit in all this? And she pointed down to the earth, onto the surface, and it was like she was saying, there, this is your time. This is where you belong. This is where you came from. And I remember her pointing to the United States. And then as she pointed to it, it was like all of a sudden my vision opened up and I could see events taking place down on earth. And I saw something that I thought was disturbing. Now, I didn't like it one bit because up until that time in my life, I was completely surrounded by love, acceptance, happiness. Everything was just great in my life, and I was sort of in a bubble, I guess you could say, with all that. That's the way children are. I mean, I was protected, and I was loved by my family. But yet, when I'm seeing this vision, I'm seeing things, there's some things going on here that aren't quite so nice. And I got concerned, and I asked, well, if these things are going to be happening, why isn't God stopping it? Why is God allowing these things to take place? And the answer I got back from the teacher entity was a little bit stark. It was like, you're not to be concerned about these things. These things are going to take place, whether you're involved or not. This is your time, but these are not things that you need to concern yourself with. These things are going to happen. I believe what I saw, the very first thing that upset me was the assassination of JFK. Because when I was in the hospital and I was going through all of this, he was still alive. His assassination didn't take place until I had been recovering in the hospital for several weeks. So I believe that's what I saw. And then I was told that this is going to trigger like a period of turmoil or a period of unsettlement in history. This is going to be the beginning of it. And I was a little bit upset. And I think then Mother got involved again. And there was some discussion over whether or not this was good for me. And I think the decision was made that at that time, my age, it was decided that they were going to protect me. And so I distinctly remember, I didn't write this before. So this is all total new for you. I'm terribly sorry, but...
No, that's fine.
I remember just being told, just sit still, and they sort of reached into my memory, into my consciousness, into my mind, and they smoothed all that out so that it wouldn't be of a major concern of mine, that my memory wouldn't be real precise. But at the same time, I was told that as I got older, many of these things will come back to you. And sure enough, it has. Mm. So I'm almost positive that very first image I saw that didn't look so good, that got me upset, was I saw the assassination of JFK. I saw the cars and the upset people crying and all that went on with it. And actually, when I got back home after the first operation, it took two operations to correct my appendix. But when I got home after the first operation, it was the very same day that JFK was buried. So I watched all that on black and white TV. It was just very sad.
And some of these premonitions have continued with you, haven't they? Because you mentioned that you dreamt about the Twin Towers.
Yeah. Later in my life, I've had dreams, powerful dreams, visions, I guess you could say. Right before something major has happened in history, and I believe the Twin Towers is one of them. It was a very startling dream. So before it actually happened, I didn't understand what it all meant, though, and that seems to be the way it goes. I don't understand these dreams until something happens, and it's like, oh, okay, I saw this. I did see something that I think could be interpreted as the end of the world. It's probably probably in the future. I'm not so sure that what I saw is something that I'm supposed to witness. I know there were things I was told I was going to witness, but this part, I mean, it was just so horrible I had to turn away. I saw wars, I saw strife, I saw fighting, I saw things coming and going in relation to the United States. But the biggest thing I saw was the world engulfed, and I believe it was like a flame. And it would have been like the end. I did not get the impression that mankind caused it, but I got the impression that it was a very natural thing that is expected to happen. And then when the burning quit, the vision of the world burning quit, I was shown that then everything will make sense. Then the world will finally be at peace. And it was almost as if a very old wrong or mistake about the earth was finally going to be corrected and put right. And there would be much love, there would be much peace and happiness, and that everything will be okay. So I guess it's pretty easy for me to assume that humanity is going to continue beyond that point. But it's
was this something that was anticipated to be in your lifetime?
I can't say that. I'm not ready to say that. But I think they were answering my concerns that why all this disruption? And I think I was shown all that because they wanted me to know that when it's all over, you'll see that everything is okay. We have to put up with all this at first, but then when it's all over, it's going to be okay. That's pretty much what I was told, that it's going to be very happy and beautiful when it's all said and done. And it's like God is aware that all this is going to happen in advance.
Sounds like it's already written, in other words.
It's already written, already seen it. I did not get any indication that mankind can choose different paths. I did not get that at all. I've heard some people have come back with that message that we can choose certain things. I believe that what they saw is true. They probably did see that mankind can take different directions. I was just 8 years old. I didn't understand a lot of it. And I just hate to put too much into it, you know, that's all, because you can't call me a reliable source when it comes to predicting the end of the world.
I'd like to jump onto another very interesting thing, and that was when you witnessed your own birth and when you... perhaps played with the spirit of a girl child that apparently died in utero or was miscarriage.
Miscarried. Yeah, my mother died in 2012. She died in 2012. I spent a lot of time in the nursing home with her as she was slowly fading away, and. Gosh, you know, she's the one that gave me a religious background, insisted that I go to church and Sunday school and all those things. And yet, here, with all of her faith and her belief, here she was on her deathbed, and she was starting to have doubts. And she started asking me to grant her forgiveness for all the wrongs that she had done to me in my life. And it kind of baffled me. I love my mother. I always love my mother. And none of us are perfect. So it just kind of surprised me that, you know, she started demonstrating a little bit of weakness. But then she started talking about this baby that she lost. I'd never heard of it before. Now, I'm not positive that she didn't mention it to maybe my brother and sister, but we just never talked about it. I'm pretty sure my dad knew about it. But she told me that she had lost a baby before my brother was born. And she just didn't know what to do about it. It was so early. She just felt sick, she said, and she went home. She felt really bad about it. And then it was suddenly, when she told me all this, that I had, she thought it was a girl. She said she thought it was a girl. And then I remembered, I saw my birth when I went through my near death. When I saw my birth, My mother was on the table. The doctor was very excited. He was working on her feverishly. He pulled me out of her with a large set of tongs. He was very rough. He was concerned because I wouldn't breathe. And on her deathbed, Mom also started talking about how my birth was not a very good thing. I was born in 55. They didn't have a brick hospital yet. It was just a house. It was upstairs. And Mom told me how they used laughing gas as a way to help women with the birth pain. The doctor was a hunter, an avid hunter. So was my father. Dad was there hanging around, I guess, outside the room. Doctor decided he wanted to take a break, smoke a cigarette, and talk about hunting with my dad. So he put the gas mask with laughing gas next to my mother, left it turned on, and told her, now this is pretty strong. You just turn your head into it and take a breath every so often if you need it. I'm going to be gone for a while, and when I come back, we'll finish this up. So apparently she said what happened was she got a whiff and it knocked her out, and then the mask ended up stuck on her face, and she passed out from an overdose of laughing gas, and it was a strong, right. Very strong dose.
Now, at some point, you left your body and became, you said, a ball of glowing energy.
When I went through my near death up in heaven at age 8, I recalled leaving my body while I was in birth. And I recalled the feeling. I recalled everything. I recalled the natural birth process stalling, that my mother's body wasn't pushing me out anymore. And I was just stuck, and I was squeezed, and I felt like I was dying. And I backed up. It felt like I was backing up, but I left my body is what I did. And I started floating around, and I saw all kinds of colors. And then I saw another entity, and I had the impression that it was a little girl, and she wanted to play. And we flew around, and she was quite fast. I kind of held back. I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. I was just a baby, but I was flying around with her, and she wanted to keep flying. And then a person came to us and called us over to him. It was a man, and the man pretty much explained that I needed to go back, and the girl needed to stay there and let me be. So I had to go back to my body, and then I was born, and I saw the whole thing. I don't know. This part is a little bit baffling to me. Is how could I, as an infant, witness my own birth, and how could I remember a near-death experience at that time? Well, it was simple. When I was 8, I had a near-death experience, and I was shown my birth, and I was allowed to experience it again. So I saw it a second time.
And you were able to meet your sister, who never had a chance to live in this world but is living in the next. I think that's an amazing part of your story.
My thanks again to Ken Lett for sharing the story of childhood NDE and the prophetic gifts he received. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE radio site and hit the past shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone, for more NDE Radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.